We are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast. This is episode number, 78?
78.
Yeah. We're recording this on August 20th, Sunday. We're recording in the morning, so if you're going to watch the Game of Thrones episode and expect us to talk about that, the episode 6 of season 7, we're not going to talk about that. So.
even though... That's some of the new. That's something we could talk about in terms of news. Hi, this is Andrew. Everybody, Chris.
Hi,
is on
Andrew.
Here.
There's it. There's Andrew. There's Christopher. We're the Brothers Geek. There it is. Sorry.
You know, we could talk about that.
Yeah.
The leaks that have been going on.
Like, oh my God, HBO, the leaks
got hacked.
Yeah.
And they took a lot of information, and some of the information that they took were actual episodes of Game of Thrones, and these hackers
have scripts.
Yeah.
And actual footage, and they have been blackmailing HBO to not release the actual, you know, this information. They want to spoil the episodes and are actively blackmailing HBO to get money out of them to not spoil the episodes.
What is the is that their end game, is to get money from HBO?
It seems like it.
Really?
I've seen other reports that suggest that they're like white hat hackers, that this is like teaching them a lesson. Testing their security.
Oh, really?
I haven't really dug too deep into that, but I mean, fuck those guys for
completely,
pretty much.
I mean, I
hacking and then threatening to release and releasing, because I've read reports that they have like all the personal information for lots of the actors and stuff like that.
Oh, really? Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Because
and,
like,
you know,
something that I don't know how they would get their addresses. I guess they would have to like find. They'd have to have
I'm
like
sure
a
they can find
that's
the financial information, all the business information that would exist to be able to pay all of these people.
Yeah, how do they get paid? I'm sure there's a direct deposit somewhere. They have,
so
they got
all of that information is somewhere inside HBO's, you know, files on all of their employees and everybody they work with. And if hackers are stealing that information, I mean, white hat is one thing. If they're not actively trying to
phone numbers, something as simple as your cell phone number,
right? Yeah. Right.
I'm sure they have. How do you get in touch with all the actors? You call their cell phone.
Yeah, if they have Maisie Williams' cell phone number and they have her Instagram
and now that now the hackers
have
Maisie Williams' cell phone number. Yeah.
These are young people who, you know, there are crazy people out there who would do damage. So yeah, as kind of silly as it is, say, hey, give us $1 million. We're going to post episode 6. No one's getting hurt doing that. I mean, the financial gain is the financial gain, but nobody's getting hurt doing that. When you get to the point where you're stealing information and you have personal information that could possibly get people hurt, you lose all more any kind of, you know, kind of I'm looking for the right word in terms of it's not like they're actively pursuing the
it becomes less fun is what is that what
maybe they are
right
they are.
I mean I guess that's the question that Patrick is bringing up. Anyone who does this kind of shit today's day and age, in my view, it's malicious.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't steal other people's information. You just don't. But just because you can doesn't mean you can't. You should.
Right.
And blackmailing for money or for publicity or otherwise, I mean, you're a bad person. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You're a bad person.
Yeah, and people worked on this show. And
that's exactly the point I'm
about
to make.
People, right. There's people
and
who
need
the money from
Once upon a time, you know, there's all kinds of these streaming services online that rebroadcast content and there, you know, you can download basically anything and you can find kind of tech that's been hacked. So you can, you have Amazon Fire Stick that's hacked or whatever, or unlocked or uncoded or whatever. And you can get access to stuff immediately. And doing things like, we have a family member, Patrick, who works in the film and television industry. He gets paid because people charge money to see the product.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That is the end game. And when shit like that gets stolen, that trickles down and it can affect the, I mean,
yeah, I'm even closer to it than you think because like I work for Netflix, which is this paid for streaming service. And if somebody just decided to steal all of Netflix's shows, like the show that I'm working on currently, instead of paying for Netflix, like, that sucks. Like, Netflix is missing out on money that they, like, pay, you know. I mean, they're probably they're making a profit for
artists,
sure.
Developers, producers, all deserve to be paid for the art that they're making.
Yeah,
it's their decision and choice to give it out for free.
Yeah.
And people who steal it, which is exactly what it is, people who steal it are criminals.
So what we're saying here is none of us have gone and watched the leaked episode.
Fuck no.
is what we're saying.
That is
never
such
will.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Plus, it's like it's not like it's we're waiting a long time. It's like a week. Like they never have it like months ahead of time. If it's months ahead of time, I'd be like, oh, this is tempting, and everyone's watching it because it leaked. You know, I'd be like, oh, shit, like, that's tempting.
I feel tempted to do it, of course.
But it's just a week. Wait, 5 more days, and then you can watch it.
It's the easiest thing in the world to type in Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 7. It's the easiest thing in the world. And then you get 10 million hits, and you can probably find one that'll watch the whole – where you can watch the whole episode in Spanish with English subtitles. Because, I mean, that's the other part of the story. There was hackers, but then some goofball somewhere hit the wrong button in – it was at HBO Nordic, and then somewhere in two HBO services in Europe accidentally uploaded it to their streaming services, and they took it down after like 10 hours or something.
But
the episodes were available.
You put something up, people make a copy immediately.
Oh,
yeah,
of course.
Right.
But that was HBO's, you know, HBO, some a couple services in Europe that did it, and that was a mistake. But somewhere, and I have tried to avoid it, but I follow some Instagram feeds that have uploaded clips. So I have seen some images.
Oh, man.
Today's episode.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so I have deduced things that will happen, and I'm almost certain of what's going to happen. But
since we're talking about it, we might as well roll into
this. You actually watched it, Andrew, though?
No. Like, images from, like, just little
It's probably like a GIF. It's like a 30-second GIF of something
like,
that happens
in
the episode.
You just scrolling through your Instagram feed, and you see an image of someone, and you're like, that didn't come up. But my mind immediately processes what I'm looking at.
Fills it in.
Yeah. And things are going to happen in tonight's episode that I've kind of figured out, and it's annoying because
I
see something, and my brain figures it out.
No, don't. Don't
I
do
know,
that.
It sucks.
We might as well roll into scene and talk about Game of Thrones. So the last episode that we recorded, I was saying that the first three episodes of Game of Thrones were pretty boring. And I'm standing with that. Yes. Like that I was pretty disappointed with how it was going.
Sure.
Fourth and fifth were probably the best episodes of this season because they're finally getting their shit together, you know?
We could talk about the fourth episode, which is The Spoils of War, which is the episode with the loot train battle.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
freaking amazing.
So it was amazing, and it's something we've been dreaming about and imagining in this series for six seasons, since the dragons were born.
Yeah, let's see if Giant Dragon murk an army. That's what we wanted to see since season one.
What would a Targaryen riding a dragon into battle be like?
Yeah.
And we saw it. And it's a weapon of mass destruction.
Even before that, the Dothraki war.
Oh, the
fighting
Dothraki.
Westerosi soldiers.
Right.
That was,
that's a thing, too.
That was the initial sort of teaser, right, is take the army across the sea.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a double dose of anticipation, right? Is the Dothraki kicking ass, and then you throw the dragon in? It was such a good scene.
And they have like dialed in the CGI on that dragon so well. Yeah. It looked good, right?
Yeah,
I mean that's a testament to the technology these days, right? Is that I'm sure that they're spending decent money, but you probably don't have to spend too much money these days in order to pull that off and make it look as freaking real as it was.
You know, they definitely have HBO money, but like, I mean, that's like feature film quality shit.
Yeah,
I mean,
no question.
Is it good as it possibly gets?
Right. I've seen some feature films, and I was like, that don't have as good CGI as that. I mean, for sure. It's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was just incredible. And then the next episode, where some lore aspects of the show, I think, took giant leaps forward in terms of Jon Snow and his identity.
But they were they're just effing with us. I both love that scene that you're talking about where she's reading the book and talking about how Jon Snow might actually be the legitimate son of Rhaegar Targaryen and he's not a bastard because they actually married each other in secret.
Yes.
That scene was annoying.
I love that, but I also hated it. Right.
I was yelling at the TV. I was too. Sam, shut up!
Yeah.
It was so I was very frustrated. Sure.
For sure.
I mean, it sucks you in. It sucks you into the drama.
That's what they wanted. That's what they wanted to happen. If they laid it out just plainly, we'd probably be disappointed that they laid it out so plainly. So. Yeah.
And there's some realism to it too. It feeds the realism narrative of the show in that's exactly how the only people who have a full picture are us, the viewers.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. So people who are in that world have bits and pieces, and they don't have the full story. It's totally natural. As annoying as it is, it's totally natural that the shit would play out exactly.
Do you think they'll ever, because
it's like, right. I'm frustrated with my lot in life, and you're reading me these banal things.
It was great.
Well,
it was pretty great.
It makes sense for Sam in that moment for his character. He's frustrated with these maesters who all they do is they sit in their ivory tower.
Right,
legitimately.
Well, he's there to try to convince them to help, and they're not. Yeah, and he's like, what the hell am I doing here? All my friends are out dying from the undead coming, and I'm sitting here reading books and cleaning up bedpans. We're out.
Yeah, he's definitely not on his game because he's frustrated. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And plus, Sam's too. The spoiler alert. Sorry about this if you haven't watched 4 and 5, but Sam's father and brother both died from fire from Daenerys Targaryen's dragon, Drogon, burning them to death. So, and he doesn't know about it, and he's leaving before he's finding out. So, what does that mean for Sam? What does that mean for their house? I mean, will he be pardoned and be able to go back to living as
he's still a sworn brother.
Yeah,
if
Daenerys wins, she can turn him into a lord again. She has that power. I mean, and the Night's Watch is like a hot mess right now, so it's not like anybody's following that rule too hardcorely. Jon Snow's running around being King of the North, and he was the Night's Watch, too.
Hold on. Jon Snow fulfilled his vow.
He died.
His watch ended.
Okay.
I mean, think about it.
He wasn't released from his watch.
He's not an Oathbreaker. His watch ended, and he left because he died.
Yeah, exactly. It's a gray area. He's alive again.
So his oath extends.
Yeah, the interesting question for Sam is that does he go back to the Wall, or does he go to Winterfell?
Right. Where does he go? I bet he goes to Winterfell.
I suspect he'll go to Winterfell and Jon. Mm-hmm. But where's Jon? I mean, Jon is
right. North, so the end of the episode is
Jon is north of the Wall.
The ragtag team of people who go north of the Wall are freaking awesome. And they're all, named characters. Do you think they're going to kill them? They got to kill a few of them, right?
They're definitely going to kill some of them.
Oh, right? Absolutely. They can't go north of the Wall and not kill a few of those guys. And they're all, named characters. We got, Jorah Mormont and Gendry and Jon Snow and Sir Davos Seaworth and the Hound.
Davos didn't go north.
He went north.
No, he didn't go beyond the Wall, though. The guys.
I thought he did. Oh no,
Snow.
He went to the Wall, but he didn't go north.
Yeah, he's not a fighter. Think
East
about
Watch.
It.
Did he go to Eastwatch?
He went to Eastwatch. He was with them at the prison, though. Why wouldn't he go? I think he went. I'm not sure.
I
warrior.
I retweeted the trailer today. There's fan made trailer set to some Led Zeppelin songs.
Yeah,
and it's headline. I didn't watch it though.
You should. It's really fun. But it's Jon Snow, it's Beric Dondarrion, it's the Hound, it's Gendry, it's Tauros of Myr.
Mm-hmm. Is that the priest?
Yeah.
The priest.
Yeah.
Who else? Tormund Giantsbane, and who's the last one?
Did you say the guy with
Jorah Mormont. Those seven.
Yeah. Oh, that's there's seven.
Have other guys with
there's seven guys. That's weird.
It's like what do you think of the
Magnificent
plan?
Seven kind of thing?
Well, the plan's dumb as shit.
The plan is dumb as shit. What are they gonna do? They're gonna bring one back. They're gonna bring a zombie back and then show them. Like, that's not gonna end well. Like,
I don't think it's gonna end well.
No.
I don't think they have any choice.
But nobody believes. Nobody believes John.
Right.
That's a very, very direct way to convince.
Right.
People.
Let's go grab one and make them and show them.
It's
show
pretty,
everybody.
Straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
It is straightforward. Okay, I can't think of any other options in terms of getting people to ally together to fight the dead.
It is pretty damn dumb, though.
It is pretty damn dumb. I can't think of any other options on what to do. I mean,
yeah,
you gotta
go
figure it out.
Like if this was in the books, I feel like this would be the death of Jon Snow. Like him going above the wall. Like if they go above the wall like this, they're just smoked. There's just
honestly,
way too many.
I think that of all the characters we can be 100% sure of that will not die before
Jon
the end
Snow.
Of the series is Jon Snow.
Yeah.
You think he's going to make it all
die
the way?
Again.
Like he's,
die again, I should say.
Oh,
again,
right.
Yeah,
like he's 100% going to live through
is,
all this.
I think if anyone is, I don't think anyone is 100% secure.
Yeah.
But I think Snow is 98%.
I feel like the people that are very close to making it through are Dany, Jon, and Tyrion. Like maybe not. I mean, Tyrion has to be the lord of his
I've
house
the,
after Cersei and Jaime die.
I think Cersei is going to make it through.
No kidding.
I think she's gonna end up. The prophecy says she dies. I think she's gonna end up.
Every aspect
as an
of
old
the prophecy
lady.
She heard has
yeah.
come true. She's
yeah.
gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Before the end of the show.
I have a feeling she's gonna end up an old lady like confined to Casterly Rock.
Oh wow.
Just wasting away and not
no way.
Able to, powerless and
no, that's the payoff of the prophecy, dude. She is dead. Dead woman walking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a question of when.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
She's going to be
yep.
killed.
I mean,
she's going to be killed
off
by
that
the
prophecy every
the queen,
step
right?
of the way. It's yeah. going to happen. It's just a question of who does it. It's either Tyrion or Jaime.
Oh yeah. Gosh, yeah, Jaime might kill her. Jesus,
Jaime's the only one who can get close. I mean, but Jaime has. Yeah,
I don't think Jaime survives either.
Yeah,
no.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's.
I think I don't. The question is how who brings down the mountain? The zombie mountain.
It's got to be
mountain.
The hound, right?
The zombie mountain will go off the leash.
Yeah.
Right? So the question is anything. The question is who brings down the zombie mountain?
That'll be a fun fight. Right? I want to see who fights the zombie mountain and wins.
Yeah. It's not going to be Jaime.
Yeah. Nope. No, that's unlikely.
Probably the Hound. My guess is the brother.
Right. If they want to do some resolutions. Plus, I think I tweeted this whole thing. They are mucking around with the timelines like crazy. One
yeah,
minute,
they don't give a shit anymore.
Right.
Exactly. They're not even like doing a nod to timeline.
Right.
Yeah,
because
journeys
like
used
they
to
go
take
to
months
right.
now are instantaneous.
Right. They go to King's Landing.
Writers, I'm sure, are like just deal with it.
Yeah.
We don't even care.
They go to King's Landing, and then the next scene, they're at the wall. That's like 3 months of traveling.
Takes a month to get there.
Yeah.
They're by boat, and they're just there instantaneously.
Yeah. Just, oh, yeah, no big
care.
Deal. They're
I'm
at the
so,
wall
I'm
now.
So satisfied. I love all the interactions with all the characters and all the – I mean, the prison scene at the end of this most recent episode kind of – there's all these characters have so much history and so much reason to hate each other.
Yeah.
And then John is just like, we're all on the same side. We're all breathing.
Right.
You know, the simplest – you know, it cuts it down to the simplest, most basic aspect of the fact that the living have to fight the dead, and if
yeah.
the living can just get over themselves,
John is the only right. John is the only one that's like screw this, like screw all this infighting. We need
yeah.
to
well,
survive.
Davos has seen it too. He saw John return from the dead. He's a believer.
Yeah.
There's no one who believes more in John than Davos right now.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. He's right there. I mean, and he's the most loyal, the most straightforward. The most kind of, if you want to call them pure characters, it's Davos Seaworth.
Well, Davos also, like, he wants to follow somebody good who wants to help people, you know, and he thought that was Stannis. But, like, Stannis you know,
he
ended
loyal
up
loyal to Stannis. He knew what Stannis was about, though.
Yeah,
he clearly.
He didn't like what Stannis was becoming because of the Red Woman. I think he blamed the Red Woman, but then.
Sure.
But
sure.
He blamed the Red Woman for Stannis' stupidity. But like, Stannis chose to burn his daughter, dude. Like,
yep.
he was a tool. So, yep. Yeah.
Stannis has lost all. He had, yeah, all the high ground is gone.
Well, totally. I think Davos is that interchange with Missandei about Daenerys is
yeah.
what has converted Davos to her. He sees two people that he can follow.
Yep.
And he will be sort of a catalyst for those two to continue with their relationship moving forward, for sure.
Yep.
Do you think that they will actually reveal Jon Snow is a Targaryen, like, to the world, or is that just for us?
I've been thinking about how they would do that.
Right.
It's yeah. not like there's the internet to sort of broadcast it. They can send ravens to everywhere, but people who get
right.
You know, messages via raven, there's always skepticism, right?
Sure.
Around the truth of the statement. And so they wouldn't do it that way. It's going to, I don't know how, I mean, I think it's going to be in individual steps. And who is the friend of Ned Stark? Who was there at the tower? Who is the only other living witness?
Yeah, the guy who killed,
Reed, something Reed.
Reed of the
yeah.
woman,
father
who
of Mira,
Bran,
yeah,
Bran, right?
Yeah, Jojen.
Oh, yeah,
Reed.
Exactly. Jojen. Yeah.
So not Jojen's the son.
The son, right.
So his father, I can't remember his name. Starts something with an H, Reed. I think.
Yeah,
he's the one who killed the guy, though. He's the one who killed.
He's the only living person who knows the truth.
Right.
Is he still alive?
Yes.
Is he alive?
Okay.
Or is he dead?
I think he's alive.
I think he's alive. You might be right.
She's going back to her father. I thought that.
Right.
Anyway.
Well,
I think Bran
knows, but he's the Three-Eyed Raven. So whoever
yeah,
believes
and,
him
and
or not.
He's like weird now. So nobody's going to believe sort of what he says, even if he's saying it.
Yeah.
So the only person is an eyewitness. And that's going to play a part, I am sure. And mm-hmm. that person has the information. They're going to run into him. He's going to communicate some information.
I understand why they've gone in this direction with Bran's character, because it makes sense if you knew everything, like who
if
you are as a human.
With that purpose, yeah, no,
yeah.
It would,
who you
it
are
would
as a
definitely jack you up,
right? It would totally jack you up because you know like everything,
especially
and
you know he doesn't have years to prepare,
right?
He sort of is thrown into the mix,
right? Yeah. But it's kind of disappointing that he's like a robot man now. You know, it's just
it's not robot. It's just he's.
He's less connected to the material.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, totally. Totally.
I just think he's less connected to people than he used to be.
Mm-hmm, yeah. mm-hmm. Well, he feels less like, you know, like human. You know,
here's the other question.
He's doing all kinds of other stuff.
I hope this next episode deals with this, because it seems as if Arya, a little finger laid a trap intended for Arya to sort of find the little slip of paper, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So he's maneuvering. Is Arya's training enough to ferret that out and to turn it on? Do you think Arya is going to gut Littlefinger because she knows exactly what he's doing?
I definitely think that something bad's going to happen with Littlefinger, Sansa, and Arya. Like one of them's going
to
get messed up. You
a
know?
Choice for Arya in
right.
terms of her having to decide whether or not she trusts her sister.
Yeah.
Or not. Because right now, Arya doesn't seem like she trusts anybody.
Right.
And she actually might trust Sansa less than others. She might still be in a mode where Sansa's her mean older sister, and she's just biding her time to when Sansa betrays Jon. Like, she might still think that Sansa's just in it for herself all the time.
Well,
she has an inability to trust anyone.
She cares about her sister, right? But, like, it's sort of this weird thing of like you're going to get killed. I think it's kind of like she's doing like tough love here. It's like I feel like if you're not smart, you're going to get murdered.
I think Arya is capable of killing anyone.
No. She's worried about Sansa getting murdered. Is sort of her motivation for all this. She's
I think based upon reading that communication, Arya is now the one who may be murdering Sansa.
Yes.
Oh, geez.
That's the problem.
That she
because
it's all about isolating Littlefinger wants to isolate
conflict.
Sansa.
Chaos is a ladder. Yeah. So the whole point of that letter is that, of course, it harkens back to season one. Sansa was forced to write this letter, bend the knee, blah, 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 by Cersei, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So on face value, that letter says that Sansa has betrayed her house.
Yes.
And Arya's like, fuck that. I'm going to gut her. She's not worthy.
Nope.
She'll
betray Jon Snow.
So that's exactly why Littlefinger wanted her to find
She's also
it.
Like a child that was like afraid for her life. So, I mean, it makes sense to me. But
Does Arya have the wherewithal to suss that out?
See, she's also she a girl who was training. But here's the thing, though, is that I don't know how much sort of maneuvering training she's really gotten and whether or not she's still because she didn't
Arya
complete
is a,
training really.
She's not a blunt instrument, Arya, but she's not a strategist. She's not playing the game. She's a person who's been trained to kill and
she's making lists and killing fools.
That's mm-hmm. all she's doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She is a knife.
So you believe that she is being manipulated by Littlefinger and she doesn't realize it.
He's trying.
Well, right.
He's trying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whether or not Arya will rediscover her family loyalty, especially mm-hmm. to Sansa, whom she's never liked and they've never gotten along.
Right. She's coming back to Winterfell with Bran, who's a robot, and Sansa, who basically betrayed their house that she's always hated. So she's kind of she doesn't want to be like the Lord, though. She just wants like their house to be safe and someone to be in charge of it. That
she doesn't. I think her need to get revenge on their enemies might be more than her need to be reunited with her family and be with them.
Right.
That's exactly right. It's a crucible moment for her.
Exactly.
Does her list trump her let's protect House Stark?
Yep.
And figure this out.
Right.
Because if she's like singular purpose, I'm focused on my list.
Yeah.
She's not looking up from the list.
Dude, she's been years and years.
She's very focused on, all right, I need to kill all these people.
She's been years and years of
an enemy in my house and is Sansa.
I think I think that process
has
started by returning to Winterfell, though. Mm-hmm. I think she clearly did not go to King's Landing. If she had gone to King's Landing, all of that would have been derailed, right? But she returned home.
Yep.
And so I think there's hope for her to figure it out, and with some training, I really hope, and it would be very bad for Littlefinger if she communicates. Here's the problem with this show is that the siblings, the people who know things, don't share it with other people.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so if she actually communicates and asks Sansa about it,
mm-hmm.
Littlefinger is toast.
Right.
Yep.
Littlefinger's toast.
Yeah. Just talk to each other about this.
But the suspicion,
that's the question, is what
suspicion and the backstabbing. Right.
Well, and think about it. All the trauma that Sansa went through, all the trauma that Arya's gone through, are they able to overcome that and actually
trust and love each other? That seems to be their arc of the season is, hey, we've been through some shit. Can we put it all aside to survive, you know?
It's a key moment in the series because it's a question of whether or not they are learning from the past.
Exactly.
Do they evolve?
Yeah.
Yep.
All these other people in the show, everybody we've seen, have all died because they've trusted the wrong people,
mm-hmm.
or they've not communicated well.
Yep.
Right.
And so, are they going to learn?
Or they thought they could handle it like what's his name? The spear, the sand spider, the sand serpent.
Oberon.
Yeah, he's just a cocky. If you're a cocky F, you're gonna get smoked.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, don't monologue.
Yeah,
dude.
Don't monologue.
Kill the mountain and monologue later.
Kill.
It applies to podcasting and killing fools.
His syndrome. he was just Oberyn was syndroming. And
exactly, he was.
Well, think about it. He couldn't overcome his need for revenge.
Right. You know? Right.
He needed to shame the mountain. And
oh, man.
No,
what a connection. I didn't even realize that. Yeah, he was trying to get revenge for his sister, and he couldn't.
He
couldn't.
Fell.
Right.
And he'd beaten him. He'd won.
He'd won. All he needed to do was end it.
He had to syndrome.
Yeah, yep. He had to syndrome, and he had to make sure that everybody knew why he was doing it. So that revenge is definitely like a factor in this show, and whether characters.
What's the old saying, when you go on a quest for revenge, dig two graves?
Totally. Yeah. Oh, man.
Will they learn? Will Arya learn?
So,
will Sansa learn?
Will Sansa learn? Will Arya learn? Will Littlefinger actually succeed with his manipulation? Bum, bum, bum. This on the next Game of Thrones.
On the next.
6 hours and 20 minutes. We'll find out.
Yes, yes. Let's move on. Do you guys... So, the Defenders dropped.
Yes.
Marvel's on Netflix. Marvel's Defenders. It's Daredevil. It's Jessica Jones. It's Luke Cage. It's Iron Fist. All the shows finally coming together. All the characters in one show together fighting the Hand. This just dropped this past weekend, so let's try to avoid spoilers as best we can, but how much have you guys watched? Because I'm five episodes in.
I finished it.
Okay.
I finished it.
So having seen all of it, what is your take on it? How do you feel about it?
Christopher?
It's solid. It has many elements of the best of what I enjoy from all the previous shows. Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are the standouts to me. They are the most real, interesting characters of the whole show. Their own shows reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
The Iron Fist characters and Daredevil characters are way too freaking angsty.
Yeah.
Where Jessica Jones and Luke Cage are real. The writing for those two characters continues to be the best of all of the Netflix shows, in my opinion. So any scene that involves them and them sort of having some agency is great.
Mm-hmm.
The fight scenes are much better than the Iron Fist show.
Yeah,
it's very well choreographed. They're really sort of engaging and dynamic and interesting. The Iron Fist character continues to be my biggest disappointment of the whole thing.
Yeah,
they really
missed the mark, didn't they, on his character? I mean, he's just so angsty and angry.
How dumb his fist looks.
Seriously, it's so bad.
I want the whole I want there to be mist around it. I want
dragon
there to
fire.
Be, like,
it should look like dragon fire.
Exactly. Mm. There should be. It should be on fire.
Yep.
Like a nimbus of dragon fire around the fist, but said it looks like just a dumbass glowing light bulb shaped like a fist, and that bugs the hell out of me, let alone his writing and his acting.
I think if they went in the direction you're asking, it would skate the line of corny, you know, or silly.
Well, here's the other thing that bothers
mystical,
me.
Dude.
I think it definitely should be hands. Right?
He took it out of a dragon heart.
Right.
I think he should be able to summon it to both hands. If it's his chi, he should be able to summon both hands.
He does, I think, right? He has.
Dude. He does.
Anyway. Let me finish. Don't interrupt.
Okay. Sorry. Jeez.
God damn. So.
Now you lost it.
Tormented, and that weighs on, you know. It drags. His torment drags. And he has a central role in the show because of his relationship to the Hand and elements of, you know, people
their
that
enemy.
Are involved in the Hand.
Yes.
Electra being the key character, right?
I love how the four of them are standing next to each other, and everybody's just like, even the Hand guys are talking about Daredevil like, oh shit, you know, like he's probably the baddest mofo of them all, you know. I feel he can fight anybody. He's just like the greatest. I mean, like the episode I just watched, I don't want to ruin anything, but I mean, he fights somebody that you're like, oh, this is gonna be awesome. And it didn't let you down because
the fight scenes are great.
Yeah,
and
the fight scenes are really good.
And actually, I just yet another comment about Jessica Jones. Her sort of fight involvement in the fight scenes is great because she's just straightforward, throwing her metaphorical weight around. Right.
Right.
She doesn't have like fight training or anything like that. She just kicks kicks ass.
She just kicks so, ass. Or, and she doesn't, well, that's, she's that's so the, pissed off that people are acting.
I love that aspect that, of
that scene.
Character.
There's this one scene, this doesn't spoil anything, where she yanks a guy out of a car and throws him on the ground, and he starts doing, like, kung fu at her. And right. And she just, like, punches the guy, like, once, and she's like, does everybody know kung fu but me? And it's it, that one, I lost it. I was laughing out loud at that, because it's so good. It's so good.
I will piggyback off a lot of what Chris says. We agree, I think, on a lot of what's going on, and I finished it, too, and I was satisfied. And this isn't spoiling anything when the heroes don't meet up really until the third episode.
Third episode, the end of the second, third episode, yeah.
And I'm actually fine with that. I kind of like how they get pulled together. It was a little tiny bit slow because you're like, I want it to get together.
I thought they did a good job of that. It felt organic.
Yes, exactly. How they come together works totally for me.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
That made it a good payoff.
Well, it's sort of like they meet up randomly. But they're all, like, working on the same thing. And Iron Fist even comments that it's...
Right. The worlds that they're interested in.
Yeah, they gotta get them all caught up. Like, what are they all interested in? Where have they all been since their episodes ended, you know?
Yeah, it made sense.
Right.
I'll highlight one thing. And the reason I love Luke Cage and Iron Fist so much is because of the comics where they're together. And they're best friends in the comics. And you wouldn't think those two would be.
Mm.
As many kind of issues as I have with the writing of Iron Fist and how they characterize him for the Netflix series and the actor being a little probably miscast and what they chose to make his storyline about from his series into this, all of those are legitimate issues with those choices. But when Iron Fist and Luke Cage are in a room together and they're talking and they have disagreements at the beginning, but you absolutely feel the affection grow between those two characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have chemistry.
Make it work. They do. They have very good chemistry.
Well,
it's Mike Holter, the guy who plays Luke Cage, because he's good.
He's so
all
good,
the time.
Dude. He's so good.
So good.
He's one of the. He's the best in this show, probably. Like Jessica Jones and him, for sure, for sure.
And you guys, Jessica Jones, Kristen Ritter, who plays Jessica
Ritter,
Jones, is great.
Yeah,
Mike Holter's great. I actually really like Charlie Cox as Daredevil. I think his angst.
I think he's great, dude.
I like him.
Yeah.
But Luke Cage and Iron Fist. If they continue to play that out, if Luke Cage appears in Iron Fist next season or if Iron Fist appears in Luke Cage's next season, I will be totally fine with that. I think Luke Cage kind of elevates Iron Fist and brings kind of a different level of interest into his character. And those two together, I think, ongoing, could be a lot of fun to watch.
I want to see Hero for Hire. That's what I want. I want those two. Like, I want them to not have separate shows. I want them to just combine their shows and that to be the next season for both of them should be Hero for Hire.
I think they're setting that up. I think they're setting that up by their conversation. Two conversations stand out.
Yeah.
The white privilege conversation.
Yes.
Right? And then when Iron Fist is they have that and he's sort of incapacitated and they're having that conversation, there's genuine sort of rapport in that scene. And so both of those scenes really did a nice job of teeing up these guys are going to be friends.
Yeah.
And Iron Fist is going to learn.
Well,
and Luke Cage is interested and curious about Iron Fist and what he's – Danny Rand and what he went through, and they're going to actually bond, and those two scenes really sort of helped that path, and so I definitely see them doing shows together.
Well, here's from a writing aspect, you know, and a character arc aspect, this Luke Cage could be the answer to what we find wrong with Iron Fist's character. Like we haven't liked his character and what the decisions they made in the season, his first season. So maybe Luke Cage is the way they fix it a little bit. Like maybe he lightens him up a little bit and makes him less like, oh, got to go after the hand. Maybe once the hand's destroyed, like he's going to be like, well, what do I do now? You know?
Well, and it also gives him a little more humanity because Luke Cage has been focused on
totally.
Yeah, that's part of Luke Cage's he cares about people.
Right.
And he wants to
And that's what Iron Fist needs. He needs to care
Luke
about
interacting with the people. I mean, his best scenes in this series are when A, he's interacting, but when he goes to the mother's house and is talking to her about her kids,
yeah,
that he's trying to help. I mean, he is very involved in people's lives. Mm-hmm. That was about what his season was about, and now he's embraced that fully.
Luke Cage is reminding, you know, that one scene, I don't think we're spoiling anything major here, by the way. That one scene where he, like, pulls Danny Rand off of that kid who is, like, helping the hand, and he's just like, dude, that's just a kid who's trying to, like, get a job. You know, he's struggling and they're paying well. And it's like, he's caught up in it. Not everybody who's part of the hand is like this evil, you know, mustache twirler.
Danny doesn't see that. I mean,
Danny's just blinded by
reality that some people turn to crime because they're poor and they need money.
Right.
Danny doesn't see that. And Luke brings it's the simplest idea in the world.
It's really good.
But that's that's exactly the arc toward Heroes for Hire, right? Because it's like, okay, the hand ceases. Yeah, the hand. I'll correct. The hand can never be destroyed, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, but it ceases to be the, oh my God, I'm like tormented by this all the time.
Right.
He actually has to do something else, and that's Luke Cage's influence is focus on what's going on around you, dude. Mm-hmm. There's problems here on the street.
Yep.
And so
you
I think that's
a unique set of skills
on.
That can help.
Yep.
Yep.
I mean, and sort of Luke Cage realizing he doesn't need to go and punch people either. Like, hey, maybe go talk to these people, try to like figure some stuff out, and like just be an inspiration, because he's kind of this he's this like inspiring figure. He just wants to help people, and you know,
well, he's reluctant.
He's you know, out of the people who are in this group, he's the one that's like, I'm gonna be a beacon of hope, you know, to this community. And Jessica Jones doesn't want to even, like, help out at all. She's just caught up in the middle of this. And Daredevil wants to help people, but he does it in the shadows. And then Iron Fist is just revenge.
He's the most, I'll say it right now, I think he's the most naturally violent of all of the characters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he has a rage that he needs to punish people a little bit.
Yeah,
that's why in his season the interplay with the Punisher is you understood he has a natural unfortunate violence about him. He has such a good ability as a fighter,
mm-hmm.
and it just comes to him so easily, and his personality has kind of moved him to being violent that in ways that he still struggles with, but he needs to figure out a way to deal with. So he doesn't want to be a symbol, but he has no choice. Like it's terrible, and he admits it to himself sometimes, but he needs to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what Elektra was picking up on too in his season of like, you know, we can do what we want. Anybody who messes with us, we can just kill. And you know,
the only thing that restrains Matt Murdock is Matt Murdock.
Right, right.
Really.
All right. Any other scene we have that?
I'll touch on something real quick.
Oh yeah, go for it.
I did a complete rewatch of Stargate Universe.
Oh, dude, that show was like, so good. So
in like
good.
6 days, 7 days, I think.
I love
season one.
Dude.
Yeah, no, I just blasted it out. I don't have nearly the obligations on my time that you do, so I was watching 3 or 4 episodes a night.
Oh wow.
Jeez.
Yeah, and I'm gonna call this out right now. Hulu's free preview sucks.
Yep, Hulu
it's
sucks,
terrible.
Dude.
There is more commercials in a free episode of Hulu than on any network television.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
And what's worse is like, you get like one commercial, like you know, watching an episode.
There's like 10 commercials and they run 500 times.
Right, right.
It was the worst.
It's the one commercial you get 4 times.
Hulu's
you're like,
and maybe that's how they entice you to spend more money and get the true upgraded package with no commercials.
Don't they still do commercials with their package? Like their Hulu
ultra premium
is no
gets rid of commercials.
Right, but you have to pay for
the middle tier where you pay.
Yeah,
less commercial.
Yeah. Anyway. I rewatched all of Stargate Universe.
It's so stupid.
That show's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All the Canadian actors are great. All the, you know, Stargate. Let's go to every single planet. It's like a forest planet because they shoot in Vancouver.
Yeah, right.
It's so funny to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like the Upper Northwest.
Exactly. Hey, it looks like, you know, coastal rainforest.
Coastal rainforest.
Every planet's a coastal rainforest.
Exactly.
No, it's great. It's so much fun. And I'm not like a Stargate devotee like Christopher is. I didn't really watch the other seasons or series. So, but I liked the Stargate universe. I liked the characters. I thought it was a lot of fun. I did a complete.
Yeah, it was a good wrinkle in that universe. I liked that show a lot.
Exactly.
It was so disappointing that it ended because, like, I loved it.
It was a bummer.
It was a bummer.
In terms of a show endings, there is some. I'm at peace. I was pissed, but I think there's some elegance to that, the ending of that show and the cliffhanger that I kind of like.
I can see that. Yeah, no, yeah. Upon rewatch, I got it.
Yeah.
It's a good place for especially Eli's character, who's kind of the focal point of the series in a lot of ways. And I'll highlight one more thing. I went and saw, it's only playing in one theater in Phoenix, Wind River.
You guys heard about this movie? Jeremy Renner.
I've heard about it, yes.
Yeah.
Jeremy Renner, is this Elizabeth good? Olsen. It's a murder mystery set on an Indian res in Wyoming.
Oh, wow.
Elizabeth Olsen is an FBI agent, and Jeremy Renner is a hunter. Mm. He's, he works for the U.S. Fish and Game Service, or U.S. Forest Service, and because of the open range aspects, he hunts predators, you know, like mountain lions and wolves who come and prey on livestock or whatever. So that's his job. It's a great, great movie. Hmm. You guys should watch.
I don't think it's playing up here. It's still limited release, right? I mean,
yeah, it's playing at Camelview, and I made the decision to watch it last. It is very, very good.
Yeah, I need to watch that for sure.
Worth the money for sure. It looks great. Shot in the winter in Wyoming, freezing blizzards, white, and you know it digs into a bit of the culture that exists on reservations these days and how kind of bleak and dark it is. The poverty, the crime that exists there, and kind of the white people coming into that culture and trying to impose their values and impose their reality on it. It operates on multiple levels, and it's an interesting mystery along the way. So I can't recommend that movie enough. Go see Wind River at some point.
Nice.
Because it's really, really good.
All right. Do you have any other scene, Christopher? Move on to some Red?
No. No other scene. I mean, I've watched some other stuff, but I will...
You will quell.
Quell my desire to syndrome.
All right, great. Yeah. Oh, the only other thing I have is Rick and Morty. This season keeps being weird. The last episode, they like team up with like a super team to like stop the world ender. And it was pretty good. It was pretty absurd though. But it's like talking about how this super team, you know, they were like all these token characters and superheroes being very absurd in this universe. So it was pretty hilarious. But I'm still enjoying that. I love Rick and Morty. And it's so dark though. Jesus. Anyways, let's move on to some Red. Christopher, what Red do you have?
What Red? I did a samurai run and picked up some books, and so I'm working my way through the Mighty Thor run that I was behind on.
Nice.
So
that's Jane Foster's Thor, right?
Yes. I love that book.
I enjoy
that book a lot. Mm. I also picked up Volume 2 of Monstrous.
Oh, yeah.
The trade, which is why I've been bugging Andrew to give me Volume 1 back.
You'll have
so
it back
I can
today.
Reread that and then move on to Volume 2.
I read Volume 2. I finished it. So once I get to my turn, I will talk about
it. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading that.
Mm-hmm.
I am listening to The Dark Tower, book one, on audio.
Okay.
How
many hours is that?
book is one? Not entirely sure.
Oh, okay. I thought it was books were really long, especially those.
Some of them are really long.
The Dark Tower books?
The Dark Tower. The first one.
The first one is pretty short, isn't it? It's like...
I think it is.
It's short for Stephen King, which is probably...
On Audible, it's only like
probably halfway through.
An eight-hour listen. It's not too bad. You know, compared to In the Name of the Wind, which is 40 hours.
he's constructed a weird world, and so I'm listening and enjoying that so far. I think that's it for Red.
Okay, cool. Andrew.
Yeah.
What Red do you have?
Reading Murder on the Orient Express, being slow with it. Ooh. I have developed...
Damn, dude, knock that out. That book
I know,
is short.
I know. I watched 40 episodes of Stargate Universe last night.
Yeah, now we understand.
I can't... What? I know, I gotta stop. I have... So do either of you guys follow One Perfect Shot on Twitter?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watch that.
They've been posting articles of... They watch director's commentary on certain DVDs, and they've been posting, like, 37 things I learned watching the director's commentary from The Rock.
Okay.
Stuff like that. So they've been summarizing... And I love director's commentaries. They're great.
They can be fun when the directors are interesting.
Yes, some of them can be really boring and stupid you're dealing with a very shallow director. If you have, sometimes you watch any movie where Joss Whedon does a commentary on his movies.
Well, he's fun. You know, he's also entertaining. You know, if the director is like an entertaining personality, then it makes it more interesting for sure.
Well, and if you're interested in like technical aspects of film, you should listen to David Fincher. Or Ridley Scott. They get into a lot of the technical aspects of their films, which is cool. But they've been One Perfect Shot that they've been posting articles where they summarize directors' commentaries, and they've been
That's really cool.
Yeah, I read one this morning. It's a quick little article. It's where it totally highlighted the idea versus kind of an artist's idea and. Someone is a little more shallow. It was Michael Bay's commentary on The Rock. And just picking up on how shallow kind of Michael Bay can be about things and Nick Cage was involved in the commentary as well and how kind of weird he is.
Nick Cage and Michael Bay on the same commentary? Jeez.
They did individual watches of the movie, and then they cut them together, which is kind of the worst kind of commentary.
I hate those. I'd rather have, like, them talking live,
But I would never ever watch The Rock and listen to Michael Bay's commentary. I'm not interested in spending 2 hours of my time doing that. But reading a 10-minute article about it is somewhat interesting because I mean I like that movie. It's a fun movie, but it's not one in my list of movies that I watch the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it highlighted little things about. How Michael Bay likes to work and how kind of how weirdly weird Nick Cage can be when he thinks about these characters and how kind of hard Sean Connery was to work with on the movie.
Really?
He's Sean Connery, dude. Yeah. When they made that movie, he's in his like mid-60s. Mm-hmm. He's done 500 movies. He has things the way he wants to do things.
Suffers no fools.
And he probably, his agent might have talked him into doing the movie and he did it. But he had certain things. He had it in his contract that all of his coverage for every scene would be shot first. And then they would shoot the other actors in the scene with him. So it's a little bit of a diva thing, but Nick Cage talked about it. Yeah, right. But Nick Cage would talk about how they would do, they'd shoot Sean Connery all day and then they would shoot his coverage for the same scene and he'd be exhausted because he was always in the scene with him.
Right.
And
they would shoot his coverage. Yeah.
So 8 hours later after they shot all Sean Connery shit, they would shoot Nick Cage's stuff and how he'd be dead tired because he'd been on set all day shooting with Connery.
He's just like a selfish actor then.
A little bit. A little bit. Yeah.
That's like, hey, look at me, I'm more important than you, kind of a shit.
That Sean Connery is more important than Nick Cage.
Probably true.
That's a topic for the next episode.
Yeah, you're right. So those articles on that Twitter feed have been interesting for me to read over the past week.
Okay,
so
cool.
Go ahead and give, and this is an unpaid endorsement, go ahead and follow One Perfect Shot on Twitter and
it's
you'll
pretty
see
good.
Those articles.
And they post fun. Yeah, they post fun like photos and stuff of movies and really good like cinematography movie shots and stuff. So I like that on Twitter.
Me too.
Sure.
So,
all right, the read that I have is I read Monstrous Volume 2, and I have to say like the first volume I said this when I talked about it, where it was kind of slow to get going, and then the end really ramps up stuff, and you start to understand who all these people are and what's going on. The volume 2, there was none of those problems of Volume 1. It was just kept going. It's just chugging mm-hmm. along like... And now that you understand how this world works and who these people are and where they're going, you have to think less and just like enjoy the actual story and the art more. And it's awesome. The Volume 2 was so good, so fun to read. I liked it better than Volume 1. So I very much enjoyed it, and I can't wait until Volume 2 comes out, or Volume 3. But yeah, I mean, I'll wait. I also downloaded and finished Murder on the Orient Express on Audible. So, I finished that. And
what'd you think of it?
I thought it was great. It was really interesting. And the Audible book is read by Dan Stevens, who plays Legion you know, and... He does really good voices. Oh my gosh, it's so like his accents.
Does he speak in a Belgian accent when he's doing Perrault and stuff?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, he does. He switches from accent to accent like crazy, and all the characters have like different weird voices and stuff, and it just makes it so good because you're, I mean, literally he's got like a different voice for everybody. So you start, and there's so many characters in this book that you kind of need that. You need to like understand what the hell's going on. And like anytime he like, oh, he turns into Monsieur Buick, he talks like this. And he, you know, he says Hercule Poirot like fucking 20 times. Like, who are you? Jeez. I am Hercule Poirot. Like, it's just like so ridiculous, but I loved it. It was so fun. Yeah, it's good like murder mystery thing.
Do you think you'll read more Agatha Christie?
Yes. I don't know.
100% I will.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I don't even know like what's book number 2 read.
That's not the first Perrault mystery novel.
But I'll tell you right now
what my next one is.
I mean, she's known for that, right? Like, what else is she known for? Like, what's the...
Dude, she's got, 30 Perrault books.
Really? Jeez.
Yeah, the next one I'm going to read is... Damn it. Yeah, I'm looking.
Damn It by Agatha Christie.
Exactly.
Damn it!
Anyways, I'm excited about the movie. Also, while I was reading it, I would look up the characters on IMDb to see which actor is playing which character, which I thought was a lot of fun. I could give like a face to the story. And I'm really excited about that movie, and I'm curious if they like stick to it pretty perfectly, or closely. If they change anything. Yeah, if they change anything or not.
We'll see. I mean, Kenneth Branagh is the guy who directed it.
I don't want to like spoil anything for anybody, but like I feel like the writers of the movie Clue kind of stole something from.
Oh yeah, that's
from
the joke with Clue is how
right.
the, kind of the trope that she invented for her
right.
stories. Yes.
Yeah, you understand where so many tropes,
yes.
Are you know they all have their origins
for the mystery genre come from. Yeah,
right.
Because
there's a little
them.
Bit of that. Right. There's a little Pretty bit much. Of that element to the story for sure. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Well,
but
I'll finish it. I just, you know,
yeah,
I got caught
you gotta
up
finish
watching.
It, dude. Yeah, it's real good. Yeah, let's move on to some played. Andrew,
yeah,
what played do you have?
Well, because realizing that I haven't played anything in a long time, I actually downloaded updates for Star Wars Battlefront this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've had that game since Christmas. I got it Christmas last year.
Right.
And I played it some. I haven't really played it a lot. It's all kind of PV, you know, there's PvP aspects and there's I played survival mode today
mm-hmm.
where you face waves of enemies.
Yeah.
And I played on Endor and it looks great.
Yeah.
And you know, you have different units that are attacking and you have to defend positions and obviously, I haven't played in months, so I'm not that practiced in terms of the controls and all the different weaponry and what's the best tactics. But it was fun. I mean, Star Wars is the universe that I love the most, I think. So any chance you can get into that. And there's no survival mode. There's no – unless I didn't unlock it. I may not have gotten to enough points where I unlocked a hero mode. But there was no hero upgrade that I was able to unlock for my particular game today. So I played as just a regular rebel trooper.
Right.
And I fought off, you know, waves and waves of stormtroopers and probe droids and AT-STs.
I think in that mode, you have to find one of those little, like, glowy blue orbs that are laying on the ground and, like, run through it, and then you become, like, a hero. I think that's how that works. Like, it's not something...
possible. Right. I just may not have accrued enough points to, like... Because it's an unlockable thing. Like, you have to accrue enough...
Totally.
Yeah, you know, you have to get enough precision kills or whatever to be able to upgrade to a hero. But so obviously today I didn't, but it's still fun. And it's first person. I don't like other Battlefront games because they're third person, but you can switch between third and first person. And I like first person shooters way better than third person shooters. So it was a lot of fun. I will, you know, that's an easy game to pick up and play for a half hour, 45 minutes, because survival mode games last about a half hour. So
I like that aspect of games that do that, where you can switch back and forth between first and third. I like playing in third, so like that kind of, that's fun that we both can have our preferred play style. That game has a lot of problems, but it sounds amazing, like all the Star Wars sound effects and stuff. And
it's just cool. It looks
great. It's a good looking
game. Feel part of it, right? Yeah, and I'll probably Battlefront 2 is coming out in like a month or two, and I'll probably that is going to have different aspects to it. It'll actually have a story campaign where you play as a Imperial trooper, like an Imperial elite trooper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read about that.
Inferno Squad or something, I think is what they're called.
Yeah, I'll pick that up and
play through the story just because it sounds like it'll be an interesting story to play through.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I would have played more, but I downloaded the updates took about 40 minutes. So
oh, wow. Yeah.
That's why I would have played more today, but
sure.
Yeah, I didn't realize I needed to download that much of that many patches onto the game.
Wow. That means you just haven't fired it up in a while, probably.
I haven't fired it up in months, so why.
I do auto downloads, so like you can set certain games to just like auto patch. As long as your Xbox is on, it'll patch in the background, or you know while you're asleep or whatever, it'll just patch it. It's very nice because then you don't have to like come home and like sit here and watch it patch. And
you're absolutely right. I just
haven't
had it set up to do that.
Chris and I both downloaded and played together Path of Exile, which is a PC game, but I guess it's coming to Xbox and PS4 soonish, but it's free to play.
What kind of game is it?
It's kind of, it's Diablo style, like top-down RPG, but it's, but you play with other people. It's MMO-ish.
You don't have to.
You can play by yourself. And honestly, like, I've been doing pretty well by myself. We started playing together, and then our schedules haven't really matched up. But I love this kind of game. This is my favorite kind of game, and it's free. And there's a lot of content, and you don't really have to pay to win, which is great. It's pretty good. What do you think of it, Chris?
I love it. It is complex and interesting. I love the Diablo style of game. You know, Destiny is a shooter style Diablo game, killing stuff and getting loot and hoping for upgrades but it's free to play, and the upgrade system and the ability system and gems, all of that is complex and interesting, and really you can play how you want and you feel powerful early. And, you know, it looks great. I'm enjoying it a lot. You could spend money on cosmetic stuff, essentially, and there's one sort of quality of life upgrade in terms of spending money on expanding your storage space.
Did you look up how much that was? Like, how much it is to expand your inventory?
I haven't worked out exactly how much it costs, but it's by points, and you can acquire points.
Right. So you gotta buy some space points and then use those to upgrade. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
But once you do an initial upgrade, you can, like, personalize all the tabs. You can really, I'm definitely going to be doing that where you can spend a little money.
Right. If you're playing it a lot, might as well give them something back for, you know, it's not fun. Bad. It's a very fun game. It kind of looks, the graphics aren't great, but the style is okay, but it's the gameplay is a lot of fun and
it's coming out on Xbox next week.
Is it next week?
Okay.
Yep.
My gosh.
We should give it a roll on Xbox.
Yeah, we should give it a roll to see what it's like on there.
I was thinking about it. My laptop that I recently purchased has plenty of horsepower. I'm sure it could run a lot of stuff. So
sure it could.
Well, we could play together on Xbox.
Does it have a
legendary listener, Sean? So I seriously think that we should give it a hard try.
How do you on Xbox.
No problem.
Do you have a dedicated graphics card to that thing, or does it have a graphics card at all? Do you know?
Dude, I don't know the technical questions like
cool.
that.
Cool.
The answer is no, then.
The answer is no.
I don't know.
It'll probably be fine. As long as the integrated graphics card is strong enough, should be fine.
I would just wait for the Xbox
version. You can wait for the Xbox version. Yeah. It should be free on there, too.
It is, yes.
Yeah,
it's free
so,
on
so
Xbox.
So that's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm definitely going to download it on Xbox, then.
I'll download it for sure.
Cool. Any other played for you, Christopher?
Yeah, I have multiple Civilization 6 games running.
Yeah, you do.
I love that game. And I just wrapped up a war against three other civs. Because
really?
I was getting my ass kicked, so I sued for peace. And so I'm in recovery mode right now. On one, and then the other one, I am strongly sort of progressing towards hopefully a science victory.
Mm. How do you get a science victory?
You
have to land somebody on the moon or something?
Basically, yeah, you got to launch a rocket.
Okay.
And so you sort of orient your sieve all the way around, you know, the science tech tree and get to the point where you can assemble all that modern rocketry and then launch. And I think that's the victory condition for science in Civ 6. And so I'm playing for a science victory in one, and I'm playing for a domination victory, which is essentially crush your enemies and hear the lamentation of the women. The other. different styles and it's different approaches, and that's the great thing about that game is you can decide at the front end that, okay, I'm going to give this a try. And I usually play by selecting a random civ. So I have to, and each civ has its own bonuses and sort of areas that it's better than others at. And so it's fun to do a random civ and then tailor your play style to their strengths. I enjoy that a lot. So I've got multiple Civ 6 games going right now, and the game is awesome. So
that's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Andrew, what trivia do you have for us?
I've gone a little more mainstream for this week's trivia.
All right.
I think I had gone very deep.
It was a deep cut last week. It was a deep cut.
It was a deep cut last week. So this is still challenging, but it's a little more mainstream,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
The Academy Awards are recognized as the kind of gold standard for artistic awards when it comes to movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who, in terms of acting, has the most wins of all time?
Oh.
And who has the most nominations, acting nominations of all time?
Man.
It's two different people.
Meryl Streep has the most nominations.
Oh, that's a good one. Yes.
That's my Meryl Streep is that, number one in nominations.
Okay.
Yep. Who is number one in wins for acting?
Number one in wins.
It's gotta be like Laurence Olivier or something. It's got to be like
I'm going Daniel Day-Lewis.
Does he have wins? He's probably only got like two or three wins. I'm trying to think of who else.
Who else has three?
Right?
I mean that's my guess. There's probably someone
it's
in
probably
30s
like,
and 40s
yeah,
who have
somebody
more
has
wins,
like seven.
I'm going
yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah. Who has the most wins? Fart. Yeah, I have no idea. I'm gonna say Laurence Olivier just to stick with that.
Pat, Christopher was absolutely right in terms of nominations. Meryl Streep has 20 total nominations, and she has 3 wins.
That's pretty good.
The most acting wins of all time is just 4, and Chris was right on it in terms of someone from the 30s and 40s, but it because it was Katharine Hepburn has all the wins.
Yeah,
but looking at the list, she has a win in 1933 for Morning Glory. She has a win in 1967 for Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. She has a win in 1960. Oh yeah, she has a win in 1968 for The Lion in Winter. And then she has a win in 1981 for On Golden Pond.
Holy crap.
Yeah, she won 4 trophies over 50 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. She's got 12
Meryl Streep will get to 4 before she's done.
Oh,
like,
she's so good. For sure.
She'll tie that up for sure.
I don't know.
In terms of Daniel Day-Lewis, he has 3 wins. And 5 nominations, but think about it. He's retired. A movie once every like 5 years.
Right. He
wins pretty much every time.
He's gonna die.
It's nominated.
He's done. He's not gonna act anymore. So
I'll tell you, Daniel Day-Lewis won because he's one of my favorites. He won for My Left Foot in 1989. He won Best Actor for There Will Be Blood in 2007, and then he won Best Actor for Lincoln in 2012.
Mm-hmm. I never saw Lincoln. Did you see Lincoln? Was that any good?
You haven't seen Lincoln?
No.
It's really good.
Is it good?
It's really good.
Yeah, it kind of just missed me that one summer. I need to rent that.
He's tremendous. I mean, there's flaws to the movie, but he's tremendous. He's tremendous as Lincoln.
Sure. Yeah. All right. If you want to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. If you'd like to email the show about all the things, questions, comments, you should email us at brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek@twitter.com, Brothers Geek Podcast on Facebook, and brothersgeek.com, of course, for all of your show needs.
Nice.
Yeah, buddy.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you, and again.